Mormon Stories Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation. All donations to Mormon Stories are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonstories.org.
I want to turn a little bit to your interaction with the general authorities and with the apostles in the First Presidency. I don't have any desire to ask you names. Feel free to not use names. Did you ever meet members of the First Presidency or apostles? And was it very rare? Was it common? Did you meet President Hinckley, other First Presidency members?
Of course, every year when we were in Salt Lake for training, we talk to them, we shake hands with them, we eat luncheon together.
Just during General Conference weekend?
Yes.
Was it the whole week?
We were there 3 days before.
Okay, so those brethren before General Conference are training.
They're training.
Area authorities, yes. And general authorities, yes. All that week long before.
More or less that week, yeah.
And what are those week? What are those days like? Are they all church headquarters?
Yes.
Where are they at church headquarters?
We are in where is kind of an audience area there.
Is it in the big tall building?
Yes, in the basement. You go in and you go to the right.
Okay.
In the end. I don't know what to say.
And down in the basement of the big tall building.
Yes.
And that's where all the general authorities are trained the
yes,
week of conference.
Yes, we sit in there, yes. And okay. The First Presidency always come first and they teach and talk to us and... And then the 12 comes, and then the presidents of the 70 comes.
Okay, so President Hinckley,
yes.
Monson, and who? Who's in the First Presidency?
Who's Eyring, was it? No.
Faust? Him. Was it James E. Faust?
Faust, sure
okay.
It was.
Okay, what were they like as leaders or teachers? So would you just like shake, hi, nice to meet you, President Hinckley, and that
yes.
was it? Or would you ever, like, actually talk to him?
No, we never get the time to sit down or to stand or in a corner to talk a little bit. But what we usually did was that everybody have to we shake their hands in a symbolic way that when we are out in the world, we can give them the feeling that we shake hand with the First Presidency and now we shake hand with you. So you, through me, you can... Shake hands with
it. So
more or less that's the way it was. And of course, when you sit with the table and have a luncheon, you have a chance to talk to them.
To President Hinckley?
Yeah.
Did you ever talk to President Hinckley?
Not that way. I was not placed on the table. But President Monson?
Who was first counselor?
Yeah.
You talked to him?
Sure.
What was he like?
He was...
Well, what are you comfortable sharing about what he was like? I don't...
I can only say that because I'm a Swede, he was quite happy about that.
And he's Swedish?
Yes.
Okay.
And his wife's parents are also Swedish. And he usually told us the story how he met his wife and he visited his grandparents. And when they found out that he was Swedish, he was no problem to get married with their daughter. And He'd been to Sweden when he was younger, and he probably still think that it's the same way now for a youth conference. Everybody go around with his folk clothes and dancing around the pole. But he was quite happy about... We didn't actually talk about any doctrines or any concerns about the church, more or less very... About, yeah, Swedes. Like you see a guy on the street, how are you? Good, fine. And
he would tell you people he knew or
yeah.
experiences he yeah. had or stories.
Sure.
Was there anything about President Monson that impressed you positively? Like, was it like, whoa, his memory is amazing, or whoa, he's really warm? Or is there anything that comes to mind?
I don't think I remember any special thing like that.
Okay, that's fine. got it. I hear you. Okay. So, and you never really got to... Did you ever want to meet President Hinckley and talk to him? Like, when you go there, do you kind of hope... It's like going to see the wizard, like in The Wizard of Oz. You hope to, like, you know...
President Hinckley, I think when he visited Sweden for once, we had him to your restaurant, didn't we?
Yes, we had.
And we had a meal with him, and then we talked more. But generally, they, when you talk to a person like that, they're usually very nice, and they ask you about your kids and how you're doing in the church. And I mean, just you know, like nice questions, like you feel good, make you feel good.
Just polite conversation.
Yes.
And
but I like to, I would like to talk to him more about the issues I found out afterwards.
Right. Mm. Okay. So 70, in your experience, especially our authorities, don't have much direct, serious interaction with the first presidency.
No.
Okay. Did you get any special impressions, any favorable impressions of President Hinckley that you would want to share? You know, was he really smart? Was he really warm? Was he just really witty? Any impressions?
I think he was very... I mean, he was kind of... he went from the top side to the last page, look for the numbers. I mean, but you know, if you got the report, it was very fast to find out what's good or bad.
So he was a good businessman, sort of.
Sure.
I mean, if he had been a CEO of a company, you think he would have been an effective...
He would have been very good. Let me tell you a story. He comes in, and stands up, and he knock his hand on, what do you say, hit his hand on the puppet, and I said, "You guys."
Who's he speaking to?
The general, 70s.
Okay, this is at training.
In training.
Okay, all right.
And he says, "I got the most wonderful reports of how many you are reactivating, and you have a real golden pen writing how much you're doing. But you know, I don't see it because I don't look at your reports. I go to the sacrament meeting statistics, and I don't see any changes at all. Don't write me those reports if you don't mean it. You have a golden pen." He was a little bit, I mean, straightforward.
So he was saying that your reports to him didn't seem accurate.
No.
That people were inflating their reports of church attendance, and he didn't want you to do that.
He don't want to do that. That's one of my big problems. Everybody likes to give me good numbers. They want to tell me how successful a church is. But I want to know the problems. I want to know the real thing.
He wants to know the truth.
Yeah. So he sent out his son to mission president, President Hinckley. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he said, I got a lot of reports from him telling me the truth. And I think after that, they changed. So the high priest was not responsible for reactivating a priesthood holders. It was given to the elders. Quorum.
Interesting. Hmm? So he liked the truth.
He liked the truth. He don't want to be deceived. He can't make decisions if you are based on just golden, or what I like to say, Donald Duck figures.
Right, right. Did you sense that he cared about, did you get a sense that he cared about the church and the members sincerely?
He did. And he was also upset that we're baptizing people, they're not staying in the church. He said like this, I don't want to have a lot of people baptized and not going to the church. It's just a waste of time. Why don't you teach them and let them have a testimony, then baptize them, so we can build the church? The biggest problem we have today is the unknown file. It means there are thousands of members that don't know where they are or if they are.
Right.
So he was upset about that.
Okay.
And he was concerned.
Right.
But I think what I did is to send out all these files to the missions and stakes instead, so they have to find out where they are.
Right. Any other impressions of President Hinckley? A good, you know, smart... Could focus in quickly on the problem, was sincere, honest, wanted the truth, sincerely cared. Did you feel...
I think he was very good also with like media. I mean, you were, as a seven, you always follow what the media say on the television and papers and so on. And he was really well trained, and he liked that, and he could co-op very well.
All right.
I think, anyway.
Did you feel he had a special mantle? Did you feel anything special about him at the time? Like, wow, this is really God's prophet?
Well, I wish I could say yes, I did, but I would say no. I mean, he's a good man, but I can't say he was Moses or Christ himself. But
when you met him?
When I met him, yeah.
Were you disappointed by that, or did you just, as a Swede, you didn't expect that?
No, you're right.
Is that it?
Yes.
Okay, so Swedes just don't care as much about authority.
Well,
they don't hold someone in authority as superior or better.
No.
Is that right?
You know, in Sweden, we don't call he's a doctor and he's not a professor. So we are good brothers, and we are the children of God, and we are equal in that way.
And you thought of President Hinckley as that, as a brother.
Sure.
But a good guy.
Sure, very good.
Impressive in some ways?
He was really, yeah, in a way, because he was quite, I mean, if you said the term successful in his calling,
yeah,
it just grown a lot, and they opened up a lot of, the whole East subject and everything happened during his time.
During his time. Birgitta, did you ever meet President Hinckley?
No.
Okay, never met him. Okay.
No.
Okay, you know, one of the biggest questions asked, and I think this is going to apply to both the first presidency and the members of the Quorum of the Twelve, a lot of people ask, do they really believe the church is what it claims to be? And do they really know the difficult history about the church? Or are they ignorant about the history of the church? Or are they just pretending that they believe the church is true, but really they're just either, worst case, just power hungry and money hungry, or best case, perpetuating the church because they believe it's good for mankind, but they aren't really true believers? Do you have any impressions as to those questions with the First Presidency and the Quorum of the Twelve? Or do you have no idea?
Of course, to find the right answer, you have to ask them themselves.
Right.
But my feelings and my experience tells me that I think some of them don't know anything about the issues.
They don't know the difficult historical issues?
No.
Okay.
At least they didn't then, 2005. Maybe they do know. I don't know now if they do.
It's 8 years later.
It is. And a lot of things happening. But I feel, actually, I have the same question.
You're not sure?
No. I will ask them. And I did for once. I'd ask one of them, one of the general authorities who was very high in the church. Are you only in the church because you paid? They pay you. They give you the car. And you have this,
stipend?
That's the way to live. And or is it you still have your testimony about the truthfulness? But then it's hard to answer because I don't know what he knows.
Right.
I mean, I was brought up, like many in my age, that the church is the only true and living church. We have the one that have the priesthood. Jesus Christ self said to Joseph that the church is not true, it's abomination to the creeds is an
abomination.
Abomination.
Yep.
And the world is wicked, the church is the Christ world. If you leave it, you will be in the Satan's territory.
That's how you grew up.
That's what I grew up, you know, and I was also taught that the prophet actually talked to Jesus. I mean, Jesus is the one who leads the church, and then he gave it to the rest of the people on the earth that this is what it is. And I don't know if the general authorities or the 12 have that feeling. I think what I understand, I mean, they are like you and me, and they're doing the best. They accepted the calling. They haven't asked, can I be an apostle, please? I'm a very good guy, you know. No, they said, yes, I can accept the calling. And I think they try to do the best. But it's hard to answer if they... That's one of my biggest questions today. How can they know all about the church history and the difficult question and still go out and witness about, for example, the Book of Mormon is a historical book and is what says there really happened. And I mean,
well, how did you do it as a 70? How did you bear testimony of the Book of Mormon?
Because then I didn't know anything else.
Okay,
so I was living in the Mormon bubble.
Okay,
I didn't know anything else. It didn't exist in my mind. So it was so easy to bear to tell my testimony, to witness about the truth and Joseph Smith's first vision and everything.
Because you didn't know the difficult history.
Not at all.
When you were a 70.
Not at all.
So if you didn't know, there's probably a good chance a lot of them didn't know.
Could be.
Because they were 70 once too, right? Yep. And then they got called in as apostles. So just like you said, as a 70, you're just kind of like a bishop or stake president that got promoted.
Yep.
And they keep you so busy, you don't have a lot of time to be reading church history books.
Yeah. But then they don't teach us anything about the early history.
Okay, so when you got called as a general authority, there wasn't like, here's all the difficult historical problems.
Not at all.
No.
So, I can remember now, though, that on one of the meetings we have in Frankfurt with the area presidency, there was a stake president that wanted to leave the church. But they never would take it up to discuss it. They said, we will go down to meet a person that has some difficulties.
Who would go down?
Area president.
Okay, but not you guys.
No.
So they would leave that to people in the first or second quorum.
And they would not discuss with us what the problem was.
Oh, wow.
We didn't know what the subject was and why he was trying to leave the church as a stake president.
And did you want to know? Or did you just say, well, they must be wicked?
I think the first thought that comes into my mind is he has been deceived by the Lucifer somewhere.
Okay.
Because that's what I was taught. If you leave the church, you are...
under Satan's power.
You are not follow the law of the gospel.
And you didn't have a relationship with President Tobler or President Jensen where you could just say, hey, what's going on there? Why is it... or was it formal?
I can say like this. They gave the signals that you don't talk about it. And then I didn't ask about it. Because I didn't know what to ask.
Okay.
But I can tell you one thing that kind of put the seed in my mind and in my heart. Is when we had a luncheon, working luncheon, in the now we're talking about area in Frankfurt, where the area presidency is there, and the 70s area authorities. And we were talking, and you know, when we sit like that, we are more free to talk, like... even then, Mitt Romney was up, started to run for the president the first time.
Right.
And one of the 70s asked, wouldn't it be great if we have the Mormon as a president of the United States, you know? The White Horse prophecy and everything, that will be fantastic. And I know Elder Jensen, who was sitting beside me, said, I'm not sure that it's so good, because then the journalists and the media will probably go and find out things that's not that good for the church.
And that planted a seed in your mind.
Yes, because I didn't know what it was talking about.
Okay.
I didn't know anything, but today I know what it is.
Right, okay, you learned
later.
But
then, you know, it's like, yeah, probably something very special, but I don't know what it is.
And they made it clear to you that you weren't to talk about difficult things with them.
Not directly, but the way they acted.
The culture.
You can feel the culture and what they call the unwritten law.
And what were some of the examples of the unwritten law? Or is it too hard? Is that putting you on the spot to ask you that? This is Boyd K. Packer's unwritten order of things.
Probably.
Just the culture of communication.
Yeah.
It wasn't free and open. There were limits. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And like you're not supposed to go after general authority to ask questions. Why didn't you answer the questions? Things like that. You shall not put a general authority or the 12 on a spot that they feel like they need to defend the church in a way, or feel like they don't know how to act. They shall always look good. They shall always feel like they don't want to have difficult questions, because they are like, I think I lost myself now.
No, it's okay. No.
What did you ask?
No, there's a culture of not wanting to put them on the spot and ask them difficult questions.
It's an unwritten law.
Yeah, when I met with an apostle and with a member of the 70, I felt the same way. I did not want to ask them an uncomfortable question. I just felt like it would be embarrassing. I just felt like it would embarrass me, it would embarrass those who are with me, it would embarrass him. So I didn't even experience the culture, and that's how I asked one question both times I met. Now, I had 100, but I only asked, you know. So I experienced that too.
But I talked
to But I imposed it on myself. He never said don't ask me questions.
No.
Although he did, they did talk a lot, but.
You're right.
Yeah. So that's what you experienced.
Yeah. You know, I tried to find out one question, why they change this when they baptized a person. You were not allowed anymore to confirm them a member and give them the Holy Ghost at the same time. You have to wait a week to the next sacrament meeting. And
they made this new rule
that
you could confirm, you couldn't confirm someone until the Sunday after their baptism.
Yeah, and then you should be on a sacrament meeting.
During sacrament meeting.
Yeah.
I know why they did that. They did that to get them to church so that they could have higher activity rates. That's my guess. But what did you think?
I think you're right.
Yeah.
But if you asked those guys why they did it, they said because you need to teach them more.
Huh.
And then you come to the unwritten law. You're not supposed to ask.
Why?
Because
you're not supposed to ask why.
Yes.
You just do.
Yeah,
is that
right.
What you're saying?
Don't ask, just do it.
Okay. So there was their culture of obedience to authority with the brethren in your experience.
And that's not what I've been taught growing up in Sweden.
Someone
said that you should jump. Many were taught to buy and just jump. And I was taught if someone said jump, I mean, I would say, why?
Mm-hmm.
Why should I jump? I'd like to know why so I can support it.
Right.
If I just be obedient, it's not me. I'm just doing a thing.
Right.
So that's a little bit clash when I met those brethren. In some questions. I didn't know the unwritten law, though.
Okay. Did you at first try and ask why, and then they made you feel uncomfortable?
Yes.
Okay.
And I told myself, I will never talk to him again.
Okay.
Ever, never. And I don't give you the name.
Okay, so you're saying you had an interaction with somebody where you tried to ask some questions and they just made you feel like you shouldn't be asking questions.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. All right. So from then on, you just kind of did what you were told?
No.
Okay.
I didn't talk to him anymore.
Okay, okay.
So I talked to the other guys that I can understand. And
the ones that you
worked
with.
The one I worked with.
The ones you worked with more closely. Okay. So did the apostles come to the area sometimes?
Yes, they do.
And would you work with them?
I had the opportunity to work with an apostle, though he was assigned to be the president of the of the Europe Central area for a year.
Okay, so was this the final year that you were there?
Yes.
So for the final year you were there, an apostle was called as president of the area.
He was the president. We met him all the time. We talked to him. And
was it different? Was it different than the member of the first or second quorum that was leading the area? Or was it the exact same thing or better?
No, for me, it was no different.
So just as good?
He was okay. He was good.
Had the same review meetings?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I feel he was more making decisions quicker.
Okay. Was there a bit of an American style? I guess they were all Americans, huh?
Yeah, but I think he's been in the leadership of the highest position in the church for many years.
Uh-huh.
So I guess with that experience, you could act.
So he acted more quickly.
Yes.
Were the things you grew to really respect and admire about him? I know that you're Swedish, so you don't respect authority.
Well, we respect, but not for the title. We respect him for the one he is.
And was he pretty impressive in some ways or not, or just kind of like the others?
I think he was just a good man.
Okay.
I mean, did a good job. And
And you had a good experience.
Yeah. He told me that when he served in Salt Lake City, he had, seven, eight secretaries working for him,
mm-hmm.
doing all the jobs, you know.
Right.
But here I only had three, so he had a little problem there. So.
Okay.
And that also can give you a little insight, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
That they have a lot of secretaries doing the jobs and prepare things, you know.
Right.
And here they only have three.
I mean, I'm not trying to get you to say, critical things, but like when you work with an apostle, can you feel some type of special witness or special power that maybe the regular members of the Quorum of the 70 don't have? Or, you know, does it feel different or is it just sort of very similar?
I feel very similar.
Okay.
I mean, they're doing a job and they're doing it great, and they don't have any other testimonies of the church than anyone else, but of course they are on the high level and knows more about the problems in the church and know more about the good things that are happening and so on.
Okay.
But I can't say that we were really different, no.
Okay. And did you enjoy that interaction?
Yes.
Okay.
I can tell you this, though. Sometimes you think that apostles like that have authority to make decisions.
Right.
And I think he thought that himself, because he made some decisions and then he had to come back and say, I'm sorry, there are some things that need to be cleared out. And
so just because you're an apostle, you can't always decide?
No. You have to clear it with the president of the 12, the senior apostle.
President Packer.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so President Packer very much is the final say on many things.
Everyone have to report to him. Not because he is Packer, but because he is the senior apostle.
Well, I would think the first presidency would be in charge, not the president of the Quorum of the 12. How does that work?
That's a good question. I didn't know.
You hadn't thought about it. So for you, President Packer was your ultimate boss.
I think, for the things I was involved with.
Well, stakes, temples, missions, the area.
No, not the temple. The temple was on President Hinckley.
Okay.
He said, this is my job, no one else.
So Hinckley,
he's the one who decided if there will be a temple. He's the one that decided what it would look like and when and so on.
So temple stuff is the President Hinckley.
It was then. I don't know if it's now.
Okay, back then.
But then
missions and membership and stake buildings and all that goes up to the President of the 12.
Yep.
That's who you consider to be your boss.
The real boss.
Wow. But did you ever interact with President Packer? Or is there anything you want to share about any interactions you may have had or not had with?
No.
Okay.
I don't want to share anything about that.
Okay.
He's an old guy, and he's probably doing the best.
Okay. All right. Have you met him?
Yes, many times.
You met President Packer many times.
Sure.
But there's nothing you want to share about that. I'm not trying to pressure you. I'm just make sure I ask the question.
I'm fine the way it is.
Okay, got it. Can an Area 70 provide feedback, criticism, suggestions up the chain that you feel gets listened to or answered? Did you feel like they wanted your advice? Not. What's the communication and that sort of thing? Did you feel listened to?
Well, first of all, after you've been on an assignment, you always write in a report. And that goes through the area president and up to the quorum of the 12 every time. And when you got an assignment, you get the old report sent to you so you can review what the other ones have said about the stake and the feelings they had and what they needed to do and so on. But also very interesting was President Hinckley. He said, we need to I don't like meeting, really. That's what he said. Sometime in the church, he says, if there don't is a meeting, we have to create a meeting so I have something to do. So he says, we need to take away as much of admin work as possible. And he asked all the 70, say, come to us and write what you think we can do to minimize the administration work. And that's, I thought, was a very good thing, because then everybody had the chance to explain and give thoughts and ideas how to do things. And one of the good things, it's not for me, it didn't come from me, it was that the bishop could renew temporary recommends in a two-year period instead of 1 year. It's one of those things that comes up there.
Okay. Mm. So you helped provide, you and your peers would have provided some of that feedback that might have helped simplify things. But if
that's the only time I feel like we as a 70 could give feedback to the first presidency.
When they ask something specific.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't like, I'm really feeling like the people of Germany need this or that. You wouldn't have gone to an apostle and said,
no. You go to the next one in the authority.
Who would that have been?
That would be the area president.
Area president.
Sure.
So did you ever do that?
Sure.
So you would go to the area president and say, I have concerns about this or that.
Yep.
And did you feel listened to by him?
Yes.
Okay.
Serious. And find out. Then always ask, we were trained like, where is they concerned? Why is it they concerned? And of course, what is your way to...
Your recommendation.
What is your recommendation for the solution?
Okay.
That's the principle we should work on.
And you would follow that?
Sure.
And you felt listened to by the...
Yeah.
And do you have any idea if they ever passed on your concerns above them, or...?
I think if they could handle it themselves, they will.
Right.
Because there is no need to have an area president if they always go up to the apostles with everything. But... I don't know any specific cases where they took my advice and gave it to someone else.
Right.
But I found out one thing I used in the leadership that we were trained the year afterwards how we could use a method to teach and train leaders. And I said, how come my name is not on the board? Mm-hmm. This come from Elder Mattsson, but there was someone else who got the credit. I don't know. I don't care, really. So in a way, so that have the intrigue,
they have
impression what you do.
Okay. Do you think that a member of the 70 can make a big difference in the church? Or is it hard to make a big difference in the church?
The role is really that you are representing the 12. and you represented the 12 to the people. You don't represent the people to the 12.
Okay.
So that's a real difficult thing, I think, because you know, the Lord is running the church, so the people still listen to what the Lord wants them to do. They're not out there to try to have the people talking to the Lord and say, here's your problem. But
so as a 70, you did not see yourself as being a representative of the people, of the members, to the brethren above?
No.
That's not how they expected you to behave?
Not really. You're right. We should be a representative of the 12.
So you were to communicate down,
yeah.
Solve as many problems as you could on your own.
Yeah.
But not past the goal, unless specifically asked, your goal was not to provide feedback upwards.
There is always ways
right.
You can, you know people and you can always help them to understand the problems and they will go their ways to help the 12 to understand.
I guess it's healthy. You want as many local decisions made as possible. You want to empower people locally, right?
Yeah. In the framework, what the 12 have given you.
Right. Just don't step outside
nope.
The framework. Did you guys manage a budget? Did the money, tithing money come to you, or did the tithing money go to church headquarters and then you were given a budget, or do you even know?
I can't even answer that question. I never did.
You never had any involvement with budget?
No.
That would have been the president of the
first
area.
The area president, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know.
You don't know.
I just know they have a budget for traveling and
okay.
Their own.
But decisions on building churches and temples, and that was all.
They prepare everything. They give the decision, what do you call it?
The report.
The report and how, so they can make the decision.
So the 12 can make the
yes.
decision. Okay.
They prepare everything for
got
them.
It. Okay. Did you ever feel like, as being a European, did you ever feel like a second-class citizen in terms of a second-class leader? Like the leaders from the United States were the real leaders, and then the ones from Europe were kind of... Or did you feel equal?
I felt equal, really.
Really?
Yes,
they didn't
I
treat
did.
You... The Americans didn't treat Hans like a second-class 70?
No.
You felt like they valued and respected
At
you?
At least that's what I felt. I don't know if some other European felt, but...
There was not this culture of like European... Leaders are second class.
No.
Well, good. Okay. Mm-hmm. What about the U.S. culture? Like sometimes Americans have a reputation of being bossy or loud or rude. Was there ever a cultural, you know, kind of a, while these Americans sometimes are a little bit bossy and their way of handling is very different than the way that we do things here in Europe. Did you ever feel that kind of thing? Or
well, I can say like this. I worked as a missionary, you know, and being a stake president, you always talk to general authorities and you learn to live in that environment.
Right.
But if you go to the culture, like if you go to Greece, as it was in the area, they feel this is for American church. We are Greek people. We don't use these things in the way you think we do. So they put the instruction book in the cell, or the
in the closet or
somewhere
on the shelf,
and try to do the Greek way.
Right.
Yeah, and then we try to help them to understand that this is an international church and it's not a Greek church, it's not an American church, but. I don't think we should not mention. I think it's clear the church is an American church. Is the leadership is American? It is. I mean, the culture is. It's like if you have a party in Hamburg, they will have root beer. And nothing to do with Germany, really. It's have to do with the missionaries, I guess, have root beer coming in,
right,
and things like that, you know.
So I'm sure the brethren wouldn't like someone to ever characterize the church as an American church, right?
They tried to get rid of that.
Okay, so they didn't want it to feel that way.
No, they want it to be international. We're not an American church. But in reality, it is, because the leaders are American, and they're trained as an American to lead.
And so how do Swedes feel about being part of an American church? Do they like it? Do they not like it? Or Germans, or, you know, Belgians, or French?
I think you have to go back. Let's go to World War II.
All right.
In Europe, the Americans will become the heroes because they help to put the Nazis away.
Right.
And, of course, being an American then, it was so popular. I mean, they were, you know, from another planet. They have chewing gums, you know. They have jeans. They have all these wonderful things
right.
that many think was fantastic, you know.
Right, yeah.
And people, you could only say, hey, there is some Americans here from a church. Why don't you come to my home and you can meet them? And they will have a lot of people come.
Right.
Because they were American.
Right.
So, but that era is gone.
Now.
Yeah.
But back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s,
yes.
It's like Americans, the war, Osmonds, it was like...
It was, oh,
the fact that it
was Zion.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so America was a real selling point
yes.
for the church
I
in the 50s, 60s,
fantastic.
And 70s. Okay.
Yeah.
Even 80s?
Yeah, more or less, no. I think after the Vietnam War, there were difficulties, you know, because you felt like you were against the war and or you supported the war. And there, I think they started really to don't feel so good about the Americans.
Because Europeans didn't support the Vietnam War very
well,
much?
It split the nation. It split a lot of people and even families sometimes.
Okay.
Because you like to be... supportive, or do you can't agree the way they do it.
Okay.
Yeah. So after that, I think the American is not a selling point.
Okay. Wow.
It's more there are some very good, but they also, you can only look at the war at Iraq. For us, many Europeans, maybe this is only me, but this is how I feel, and I feel that people feel, is they just put up a lot of lies and then they go in because they need the oil and then say, yeah, we like to get rid of a real tuna who's the president of Iraq.
Right.
Then they go there with lies. You don't trust them anymore.
Okay, so American foreign policy started affecting... American foreign policy created a negative impression of America in Europe, starting from the Vietnam War through Iraq and all that, and that has started to have a negative impact on Europeans' perception of the church.
Yeah, it's not always a good thing to be
right.
an American and
right.
represent the church.
Okay.
So I think the church really wants to have the church be international and try, I guess, to have more leaders come from Europe and other countries, but... As I'm a European, we talk that way. We have more European mission presidents. We have more area authority 70s. We have temple presidents from Europe and so on. So, of course, the church is growing. But the leadership is still much like the I call it the military way. I'm the boss. When I say something, you do it. Don't question.
That's how
obedient.
That's how the leadership is. Even those from Europe have adopted that obedience leadership style? Or the American leaders in Europe?
I don't think in the church they think about it so much.
Okay.
Because they're used to it.
Right.
That's the way they've been.
Got it.
But I think also it there will be more. You know, they always talk about, you still have council meetings, you still sit in council. And President Hinckley says, if you don't sit in council, you are a dangerous leader.
Oh, that's good.
It is.
That sounds good.
Because you can lead them and you are dangerous. You have to sit in council. And you should also sit with the Relief Society's presidents.
That's awesome.
Hmm? I like that.
Yeah.
And as a state president, I always have a meeting with the Relief Society president. And
okay.
Discuss the issues and... what you felt about that, and give me input and so on. So
okay.
It's good. So it is changing, but still it's an American church.
Okay. Were there Did you feel, as a member of the third quorum, like inferior to the second and first? Was there any feelings between the quorums, or did everyone feel equal, even though there was a first, second, and third quorum?
I never experienced anything like that.
Okay.
The third quorum, when I was there, we had people from Philippines,
right,
from Africa, yeah, from Europe, so we were all over the world.
So when you came to headquarters, it's not like the first quorum was treated better than the second quorum,
no,
which was treated better than the third quorum.
The only difference is that the first and the second quorum, they are brought into the headquarters twice a year.
Right.
But the area authorities, the third quorum is once a year.
Okay, okay. Did you ever, how did they hold you accountable? Like, sometimes I've heard that these missions where there are too many baptisms and they're baptizing people who aren't ready, that the mission presidents are pressured by the area authorities to get high numbers. And the theory is that the area 70 want to become apostles, and if they have lots of baptisms and high attendance numbers and the golden pen, like you referenced earlier, that might increase their likelihood of becoming apostles. Did you see that type of pressure? Did you impose that type of pressure? And then, if so, did that come from apostles putting pressure on area authorities? Or do you have any idea?
Well, if I go back to what I said, that President Hinckley actually told us, don't baptize people who are not ready, because we don't do any good for anything, not for the church, not for them,
right,
not for the families.
Right.
So we more or less were out there trying to keep the mission presidents in line with President Hinckley's way to look at it. Don't go out and get numbers. We were more teaching that every member has their free agency.
Right.
You can never force anyone into the church and things like that. Some missions had mission presidents like they were military. They were standing up, you know, and reading the DNC, the fourth section, now behold a marvelous work, like a soldier,
right,
loud,
right,
and clear.
Right.
And we tried to get that more like a natural way to live and enjoy the mission instead of being military.
So you would try and calm the mission presidents,
yes,
down. Sometimes the mission presidents were overzealous.
Yes.
Okay. But you don't feel like area authorities,
no,
pressured the mission presidents?
I never had that experience at all.
Okay, good, good.
Never.
And you never felt pressure from the apostles to get numbers and statistics, or did you?
No.
Okay.
I didn't.
Okay.
I don't know how it is now, but then it was more keep it strong. The way I taught was when Brigham Young started to build the temple in Salt Lake City, he put these stones in the ground, and after he pull all the dirt on it to try to hide it from the military. He took it away again, I mean the dirt. And he can find out, someone told him there is cracks in the stone. And he took a decision, take them away and put granite instead. And that's what I tried to taught, that build the church solid. Just with numbers, you will have a lot of cracks, and you will have a building that,
right,
don't be any strong. So that's more or less the attitude, at least I can remember now, and what we tried to talk.
You're trying to build a solid foundation.
Build it on a solid foundation.
That's how you ran the area. Okay. All right. So I think you've already answered this question, but if members, you know, try to communicate with their state president or try to communicate with the area authorities to pass information up. You know, I've heard that you're encouraged to not pass information above. Is that true?
Yes, it is.
Now, a lot of people are frustrated about that. They,
yes,
want to be able to communicate with the First Presidency of,
yeah,
the Quorum of the 12. They don't want their messages to be sent back. Do you have feelings about that?
Yeah.
Well, maybe we can talk about that later. But was that your impression, that members were not encouraged to communicate?
But I can if I answer it easy, I can say like this. A lot of members like to communicate with Jesus Christ directly.
Right.
And have to do it through prayer or have to go to the church. But I guess the Lord's plan is that we go through the leaders of the church.
Okay.
So if you send a letter to the First Presidency, as a seminary, I will have it the next week with a note saying, please go to the state president and explain that he will handle this in the best way.
So they delegate back to the directly. State president. Do you think they read the letter? Like,
no.
They don't read it?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Might be wrong, but they have to open the letter before they should read it, I guess.
Okay. So not a lot of communication from the grassroots up to the brethren.
That's my feeling.
Okay. Did you feel like you were involved in just a corporate organization, or did you feel like there was an important spiritual component too? Did it feel all corporate and business, or did it feel like a good balance of business but also spirit?
I think the church today, if you look at the 12, they have responsibility for the doctrines of the gospel. They are responsible for maybe you could call that the church. And then you have this business part. They're also responsible for that. I mean, they have a lot of employees. There are thousands of people that get the money from the church. And then you have the school, and they're also responsible for that.
School?
Yeah, like BYU,
okay.
CES.
Right, education.
This is education.
No, it's
right.
Good. No.
Sure. So I think sometime the feelings could be that they have a lot of responsibilities and they don't have time. So they put the time, as I think, in the corporation.
Right.
And I think if you do that right, the church will have money to do things for the doctrines. But personally, I feel a lack of, where is the doctrine? What is the explanation of a doctrine? Where is the revelations, the seers,
the prophesying, the seeing, like, and the revelation.
They give people a kind of a motivation that the Lord is giving his words to his people. I guess I missed that. But in the other way, you can say, after being had a meeting on a conference, you feel uplifted. You feel fine.
Right.
You feel good and motivated, I guess. But you can't go out and say the Lord have revealed new things.
Okay.
Maybe a small temple was one of those that people feel, some general author feel is a revelation.
So you're saying that, let me just see if I can summarize, that being a general authority is a lot of administration, bureaucracy, a lot of business.
What I mean, the 12.
Okay, okay.
And of course, the 12 need the 70s to help them.
Okay. And so being a member of the 12 is a lot of administration, bureaucracy, business.
Yeah.
Okay. And you say sometimes you wish there was a little bit more opportunity for spiritual, doctrinal kinds of matters, but you didn't experience that.
No.
You experienced them as more bureaucrats or businessmen than
I mean, it's hard to say that, because I love those people. They're fantastic people and wonderful people.
We're not criticizing them.
No,
we're just saying
but
that's...
But I missed that part.
Okay.
To see that the Lord give the prophet and the 12 wonderful things, you know.
Okay, so you're saying from the 12 you did not see a lot of prophecy, seership, or revelation. It was more administration.
I can say like this. I'm being in corporations, how to lead and run a corporation.
Right.
And I can see the exact same way they do it. I mean,
right.
They sit there, they talk about problems, they ask people what can we do about it, and then they take a decision on it. And often it's pretty good, sometimes it's not.
Right.
And then you start all over again. And
right.
What do we do with this problem? And I think this is exactly the way the church is run, with a prayer.
Right, with a prayer. So it was very practical.
Yeah.
And you're saying sometimes it didn't feel as spiritual as you would have liked, or you're not so sure there was much difference between the way a corporation would be run in the church. You wish, but you're saying you did feel the spirit sometimes.
I feel a good spirit when you had this meeting, you had the conference. You feel it's like if you take care of something,
mm-hmm.
and you like you have Christ talk about take care of the pound. He take care of your talents.
Okay, right.
And someone has developed the talents and given hundreds back.
Right, right.
Someone is 10%. Someone is dig a hole and put the.
You feel like you're growing the church.
Yeah, and sometimes I think we don't. We put the talent in the ground instead of let the Lord give us some new things, be more proactive and get things going. We need more blacks and the priesthood.
Right. More revelations.
Need more revelations.
So you're saying it sometimes it feels like the leadership from Salt Lake, it's more bureaucratic and not a lot of prophecy and leadership spiritual visionary types of things, right? Okay. But it, another way to look at it is that it's just people trying to do their best, and they're not like, maybe it's just the Swedish point of view that we shouldn't expect these apostles to be much more than you or I, just men trying to do their best, and that's what you
experience. So what is the difference with other churches then?
I don't know.
Well, maybe you should ask the questions.
What is the difference? Well, you're saying you didn't see much of a difference.
No.
Okay. And was that, I guess, are you saying that was disappointing for you a little bit?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. A lot or a little bit?
Well, today I think it's more than I felt then.
Okay, so at the time you're kind of just enjoying it and feeling like you're doing good work.
Sure.
Looking back, you sort of say, maybe we could have had a little more prophecy and seership and revelation.
One of our daughters is married to one is not a member. He come from the Pentecostal church.
Yeah.
And his parents are also Pentecostals. And they know a little bit about the Mormon church. They know we have a prophet. And when they ask me, what kind of revelations have your prophet given to the earth from the Lord that our leaders can't give? I don't know how to answer it. I can say, well, he said you have family meetings. Well, we also love families, you know. But what is it that they give us? That's what give me a little hard time. I have a hard time to explain.
Right.
Why we have a prophet.
Got it.
I mean, we have a president, I know that. But
but the prophecy, you're kind of wondering where it comes from. Did you grow spiritually as a general authority, do you feel like? Or as a 70? Looking back, did you feel like you became a better man?
The feelings I had then was that I grow a lot. Because you get a lot of experiences, you talk a lot in prayers with Heavenly Father, you talk with good people, you talk with your wife, and you get inspired to do things that you feel like this is very good, you grow.
And by the end, how did you feel about your 5 years of service?
I have a little difficulties in them because...
At the time, how did you feel?
They wanted me to stay even longer.
Do you serve for five-year terms?
Yes. I was called for 5 years.
Okay.
But then they can extend it.
Okay.
And so on. And they really tried to... They want me to extend my callings. But personally... matters in my job and with my health and so did that I couldn't go any longer.
So you asked to
to
be done after 5 years?
Yes.
Okay. And overall, looking back, at the time, did you feel pretty at peace with your service?
Today, I think I will do something different, but at the time, I was quite happy. Right. I was quite, I was the first area authority 70 in Sweden.
Right.
And you proud and humble.
Proud and humble. And Birgitta, how did you feel about your 5 years together serving as an Area 70 couple?
Seeing my husband work all the week and then going on traveling at the weekends, we said goodbye Fridays, and I see you on Sunday night.
Oh.
Many times he was so tired, and he felt a little nervous about the thing he was going out to. But always when he came home, he was uplifted and really satisfied. And we feel blessed this period.
Your family felt blessed?
Yes.
You felt blessed?
Yes.
You look back on it as a good time?
Yes.
Come, come, ye saints, no toil nor labor fear.